Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Lee with Minister of 12th Hour. Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is October 16, 2017, or it is Tishri 27, 2021. We will start our second service today with a song that I've written entitled, And Lead Me to the Rock That Is Higher Than I. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, and I'll forever be. Indebted to the sun of every morning, who came to set me free. Oh, the life in this world I have to live is but a stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain, it's never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the praise of the Savior's feet. Lead me to a dance of the sky. A man on a mission came to this world, sort of born to fly. Born in a manger, especially a stranger, fit to see passing by. Oh, the moon shone bright with the heavenly lights of all the starry host. For the brightest one of them all is the one that guards them all. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's high enough. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet. Lead me to the magic of the sky. God pointed to the newborn king as he lay in the manger's crib. For he's a descendant of the one created from the Adam's rib. As the time rolled on, many stories are told about the man of the Galilee. How he changed the water into the wine, made the wine to see. Lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me in a way by the river of life. Lead me to those mansions in the sky. For this is a man for all time upon whom men come to rely. For the witness of many miracles right before their eyes. Oh, he lived and he died and he rose again with the victory over the grave. It's a proven once and for all that he had the power to save. Lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to the mountains in the sky. Don't leave me in the desert, barren and dry. Vanquished forever and left to die. Brother, lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me to the rock that's hard enough. Lead me to the rock, Lord, lead me to the rock. To the rock that's hard and not. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet. Lead me to the mansions in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mansions in the sky. Raise them up, part 9. We're going to start with Ezekiel 34. Let's see what we have here. This says that in verse 29, it says, And I will raise up for them a plant of renown, and they shall be no more consumed with hunger in the land, neither bear the shame of the heathen any more. Ezekiel 34. Let's start with verse 1. Now back up. So then the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh Elohim unto the shepherds, Woe be unto the shepherds, of Israel that do feed themselves? Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? You eat the fat, and you clothe you with the wool. You kill them that are fed, but you feed not the flock. The disease have you not strengthened, and neither have you healed that which was sick. Neither have you bound up that which was broken. Neither have you brought again that which was driven away. Neither have you sought that which was lost. But with force and with cruelty have you ruled them. And they were scattered because there is no shepherd. And they became meat unto all the beasts of the field when they were scattered. My sheep wandered through all the mountains and upon every high hill. Yea, my flock was scattered upon all the face of the earth, and none did search or seek after them. Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh, as I live, saith the Yahweh Elohim. Surely because my flock became a prey, and my flock became meat unto every beast of the field, because there was no shepherd, neither did my shepherds search for my flock. But the shepherds fed themselves and fed not my flock. Therefore, O you shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I am against the shepherds, and I will require my flock at their hand, and cause them to cease from feeding the flock. Neither shall the shepherds feed themselves any more, for I will deliver my flock from their mouth, that they may not be meat for them. For thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will search my sheep and seek them out, as a shepherd seek out his flock in the day that he is among his sheep that are scattered, so will I seek out my sheep and will deliver them out of all places where they have been scattered in the cloudy and dark day. And I will bring them out from the people and gather them from the countries and will bring them unto their own land and feed them upon the mountains of Israel, by the rivers and all the inhabited places of the country. I will feed them in a good pasture and upon the high mountains of Israel shall their fold be. There shall they lie in a good fold and in a fat pasture. All they feed upon the mountains of Israel. I will feed my flock and I will cause them to lie down, saith Yahweh Elohim. I will seek that which was lost, and bring again that which was driven away, and will bind up that which was broken, and will strengthen that which was sick, but I will destroy the fat and the strong, and I will feed them with judgment. And as for you, O my flocks, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I judge between cattle and cattle, between the rams and the he-goats. Seemeth it a small thing unto you to have eaten up the good pasture? But you must tread down with your feet the residue of your pastures. And you have drunk of the deep waters, but you must foul the residue with your feet. And as for my flock, they eat that which you have trodden with your feet, and they drink that which you have fouled with your feet. Therefore thus saith Yahweh, Elohim, unto them, behold, I will judge between the fat cattle and between the lean cattle, because you have thrust with side and with shoulder, and pushed all the disease with your horns, till you have scattered them abroad. Therefore will I save my flock, and they shall no more be a prey, and I will judge between cattle and cattle. And I will set up one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them. Even my servant David, he shall feed them, and he shall be their shepherd. And all the Yahweh will be their Elohim, and my servant David a prince among them. All the Yahweh has spoken it. And I will make with them a covenant of peace, and I will cause the evil beasts to cease out of the land, and they shall dwell safely in the wilderness, and sleep in the woods. And I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing. And I will cause the shower to come down in his season. There shall be showers of blessing. And the tree of the field shall yield her fruit, and the earth shall yield her increase. And they shall be safe in their land. And you shall know that I am the Yahweh when I have broken the bands of their yoke, and delivered them out of the hand of those that serve themselves of them. They shall no more be a prey unto the heathen, neither shall the beast of the land devour them, but they shall dwell safely, and none shall make them afraid. And I will raise up for them a plant of renown, and they shall be no more consumed with hunger in the land, neither bear the shame of the heathen any more. This shall they know that I, the Yahweh, the Elohim, am with them, and that they, even the house of Israel, are my people, saith Yahweh Elohim, and ye my flock, the flock of my pasture, are men, and I am your Elohim, saith Yahweh Elohim. After having read that now, let's go read from Time of Greetings, Volume 1, number 34. Let's go pick up on V.T. Hollis' comments here, taken from the book of Isaiah, chapter 33. It said, the spoiler spoils are taken by the lame and the weak. Let's do that again. Now it says, the spoilers spoils are taken by the lame and the weak. Text of address, March 29th, 1947, Vicky Hollow. And the subject is found in Isaiah 33. Woe unto thee that spoilest, and thou wast not spoiled, and dealest treacherously, and they dealt not treacherously with thee. And thou shalt cease to spoil, thou shalt be spoiled. And when thou shalt make an end to deal treacherously, they shall deal treacherously with thee. Taking into consideration what follows in this chapter, and in the next two chapters, for chapters 34 and 35 are a part of the subject that is in chapter 33. It becomes clear that the one upon whom the woe is pronounced is the congregation preceding the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. So now, what is this congregation? This is the congregation of Gilead Center from 1970 up to 2010. They had a full 40-year period, divided up into two parts and two leaders. First leader had his 33.5-year part from 70 to 2003, and Elijah David had the second part from 2003 to 2010. So it says, the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, the day in which the sinners of Zion perish, the day in which the repentant ones are given their reward, the day of Yahshua's vengeance, and a year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. Isaiah 34:8. The church is especially pointed out by the fact that unlike the Old Testament church, she has been spoiling, but has not been spoiled. That she has been dealing treacherously, but she herself has not been so dealt with. But the inspiration, however, goes on to cast a reverse of this situation. The congregation shall be spoiled and dealt with treacherously. These faithful ones in the midst of her, however, shall find grace, for they plead. Isaiah 33:2. O Yahweh, be gracious unto us. We have waited for thee. Be thou their arm every morning, our salvation also in the time of trouble. This verse shows that while the pronouncement of the woe, Isaiah 33:1, is being made, at the same time a deep-rooted reformation is taking place among Elohim's truth-seeking people. They are praying not for themselves alone, but for their brethren also, for they fully realize that they are approaching the time of trouble, and their hope lies in the fact that they have waited for the Yahweh. Yahweh's power shall be felt throughout the earth. Isaiah 33:3. At the noise of the tumult, the people fled. At the lifting up of thyself, the nations were scattered. This verse reveals that when Elohim manifests his power among the people, the world will feel the effects of it. Isaiah 33:4. And your spoils shall be gathered like the gathering of the caterpillar, as they run into and the furrow of the locust shall he run upon them. The spoils which the church has acquired he gathers as the gathering of the caterpillar. And it shall be said, Isaiah 33:5, the Yahweh is exalted. for he dwelleth on high. He hath filled Zion with his judgment and righteousness. When these things take place, then Zion, the church purified, will be filled with judgment and righteousness. Moreover, Elohim's faithful ones have this assurance. Isaiah 33:6. And wisdom and knowledge shall be the stability of thy times, and strength of salvation. The fear of the Yahweh is his treasure. But concerning their unrepentant mighty ones, inspiration declares, Isaiah 33:7. Behold, their violent ones shall cry without. The ambassadors of peace shall weep bitterly. He receiveth those who are proclaiming peace rather than the day of the Yahweh shall weep bitterly. Isaiah 33:8. The highways lie waste. The wayfaring man ceases. He hath broken the covenant. He hath despised the city. He regardeth no man. In the language of the day, this verse would read, for the missionary routes, they lie waste. The missionary himself ceases. He has broken his contract. He has despised the city. He regards no man. Isaiah 33:9. The earth mourneth and languishes. Lebanon is ashamed and hewn down. Sharon is like a wilderness, and Bashan and Carmel shake off their fruits. The nouns in this verse, being profoundly figurative, and the time of the fulfillment yet future, we are unprepared to make any comment. Isaiah 33:10. Now will I rise, saith Yahweh, now will I be exalted, now will I lift up myself. At the time, the conditions here described materialize, and it is that Yahweh will arise and be exalted and lifted up, or Yahshua will arise. But unto those that are at fault, he forewarns. Isaiah 33:11. Ye shall conceive chaff, ye shall bring forth stubble, your breath as far shall devour you. Turning unto the sinners and the hypocrites among his people, those upon whom the woe of verse 1 is actually pronounced, Yahweh reveals that the fruit of their doing shall be chaff and stubble, that their own breath shall devour them as if it were fire. Moreover, concerning their followers, he adds, Isaiah 33:12. And the people shall be as the burnings of lime. As stones cut up, shall they be burned in the fire. Having commenced his purifying work in Zion, he declares, in Isaiah 33:13-14, hear ye that are far off, what I have done, and ye that are near, acknowledge my might, for the sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has surprised the hypocrites. Now, you get that? The sinners in Zion are afraid. Who among us shall dwell with the divine fire? Who among us shall dwell with the everlasting burning? When the righteous judge rises to sift the people, then the hypocrites will not be boasting that they are just as good Christians as any. Neither will they say any more, we do not need more truth. Instead, fearfulness and surprise will overtake them. The greatest and most honorable question will then be, who among us shall dwell with the devouring fire? Who among us shall dwell with the everlasting burning? And there is an all-inclusive answer, Isaiah 33:15-17. He that walketh righteously and speaketh uprightly, he that despiseth the gain of oppression, that shaketh his hands from holding of bribes, that stoppeth his ears from hearing of blood, and shutteth his eyes from seeing evil, he shall dwell on high. His place of defense shall be the munitions of rocks. Bread shall be given him, his water shall be sure. Thine eyes shall see the king in his beauty. They shall behold the land that is very far off. Passing from this expression of the divine care and scene of the beauty, they are next told. Isaiah 33:18. thine heart shall meditate terror. Where is the scribe? Where is the receiver? Where is he that counted the towers? Terrifying indeed is the realization that those who are found without the wedding garment, among whom are those who hold the highest church offices, secretary and treasurer, are cast out to weep and gnash their teeth. But the remnant, those who are left, shall be exalted. And of them Yeshua said in Isaiah 33:19, thou shalt not see a fierce people, a people of a deeper speech than thou canst perceive, of a stammering tongue that thou canst not understand. The guests who pass the master's inspection are actually to be made great, but be it in comprehension of a deep speech, or be it in the understanding of a stammering tongue, and none shall be greater than they. The eyes of the faithful are next directed to the city of Yahweh. Isaiah 33:20. Look upon Zion, the city of our solemnities. Thine eyes shall see Jerusalem, a quiet habitation, a tabernacle that shall not be taken down. Not one of the sticks thereof shall ever be removed. Neither shall any of the cords thereof be broken. After the troublemakers have been removed, then Yahweh's people will be seen to stand steadfast and sure, standing not even the slightest chance of ever being disturbed. And the saints shall be full of joy, even now, they exclaim. Isaiah 33:21-22. But there the glorious Yahweh will be unto us a place of broad rivers and streams, wherein shall go no galley with oars, neither shall gallant ship pass thereby. For Yahweh is our judge, Yahweh is our lawgiver, Yahweh is our king, he will save us. All these things shall be ours if we are but faithful unto the end. Again, addressing the church that is approaching the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, he declares in Isaiah 33:23, thy tackings are loosed. They could not well strengthen their masts. They could not spread the sail. And then is the prey of a great spoil divided. The lame take the prey. They that obey not the voice of Yahweh are here forewarned that the day is at hand when they will find themselves unable any longer to gather spoil. And it is that their spoil shall be divided, and the lame, the seemingly weak and helpless, shall take the prey. Isaiah 33:24. And the inhabitants shall not say, I am sick. The people that dwell therein shall be forgiven their iniquity. Just think, in a little while, if we be faithful, no longer will any of us need to say, I am sick. Now to review a few of the high points of our study. Upon the unfaithful, who are approaching the great and dreadful day of Yahweh pronounces a curse. The church is to be stripped of the spoil which she has acquired, and is to be dealt with treacherously, just as she has dealt with others. Very obviously, at the time this pronouncement is made, a deep-rooted reformation is taking place among Yahweh's truth-seeking people. Notice it says truth-seeking people. They recognize the fact that they are approaching the time of the trouble, and they are reassured that their stability and strength of salvation are to be found in the wisdom and knowledge, in the spirit and in the truth. For the day, the fear of the Yahshua is to be their greatest treasure. When the Yahweh manifests his power among his people, even the world will feel the effects of it. For the missionary roots lie waste, and the missionary himself ceases. He regards no man. Yahweh reveals that the first fruit of the sinners and hypocrites among the people shall be chaff and stubble. Their own breath shall devour them as if it were fire. Fearfulness and surprise shall overtake them. And it is that Zion, the church purified, is to be filled with the judgment and the righteousness. For Yahweh is at that time to be exalted and lifted up. his people who have walked uprightly shall be blessed with his divine terror. Their eyes shall see the king and his beauty. The church shall be steadfast and sure, never to be disturbed. The spoil which the denomination has acquired will be taken by the land. By Yahweh's true people, they shall be forgiven their iniquities and their health shall be restored. Yes, the promise to you is sure. Thy health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee. The glory of the Yahweh shall be thy reward. Isaiah 58:8. If you will but give heed unto this solemn warning and remain faithful unto it. Okay, that ends volume 1, time of reading number 33. Number 34, talking about the text for prayer in that one. Let's forego that and get right on into the topic. The nations see Edom perish, a desert blossom, and a highway unto Zion. Okay, now Zion comes up. At one time, Edom dwelt in Zion, because Edom is the headquarters for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the General Conference. They should see Edom, the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, and all of her followers perish. The desert blossom and a highway unto Zion. Time of Greeting, Volume 1, Number 35. We're going to start with the prayer thought. Do you even so unto them? Our reading this afternoon is found on the page 192 and 193 of the Mount of Blessing, on the assurance of the love of Yahweh toward us. Yahshua enjoins love unto one another, and one comprehensive principle covering all the relations of the human fellowship. The Jews had been concerned about what they should receive. The burden of their anxiety was to secure what they thought their due of the power and respect and service, but Yahshua teaches that our anxiety should not be how much are we to receive, but how much can we give. For the standard of our obligation unto others is found in what we ourselves would regard as their obligation unto us. Everyone who has been made a steward of the manifold grace of the Elohim is called upon to impart unto the souls in ignorance and darkness, even as were he in their place. He would desire them to impart unto him. So also with the gifts and blessings of this life, whatever you may possess above your fellows places you in debt to that degree unto all who are less favored. What shall we pray for this afternoon? That we may imbibe the great principle of the golden rule and realize that our concern should not be as to how much we are to receive, but as to how much we can give. Let us pray for the understanding that the standard of our obligation unto others is found in what we personally would regard as their obligation unto us, and also that whatever we possess above our fellow men places us to that degree in a debt unto those less favored. End of prayer thought. Nation see Edom perish, desert blossom, and a highway unto Zion. Now, in this wonderful, our key word is raise him up. Raise him up. Our subject is found in Isaiah 34 and 35. Last week, Vicki Hollis, he says we studied the 33rd chapter, the Yahshua's burden concerning the church as she approaches the time of the harvest. And we know that Gilead Center is in the prophecy to fulfill the statement from 1973. In our day, that is literally, that was literally the church before the harvest. The time that the wheat is put into the barn. That would be the 144,000. When the 144,000 appear in the kingdom, and reality, then you know that the wheat has been put into the barn. And the tares burn. Okay, so the tares, once the wheat comes forward, I'm telling you, the tares, it's going to be burned. Now, that would start with the leadership of the General Conference. So the ones that are living today, that are the leadership of the General Conference and all of her ministers, are going to be rounded up and burned. Now, why is that? Because they're the ones that are in the field, associated with the 144,000, because they own the Adventist Church. 144,000 is in the Adventist Church. And so, therefore, the General Conference leadership and all of our ministers and all of these Adventist churches around the world, they're commingled together. Okay, Matthew 13:30. The time the good fish are put into the vessels. Now notice it says vessels, more than one vessel. That's your 12 vessels. The good fish is the 144,000, 12 tribes of Israel. And the bad fish cast out. Matthew 13:47-49. So that's the same thing as separating the tares from the wheat. As are those who have not been, have not the wedding garment, on Matthew 22:1-13. Continuing now, and to the 34th chapter, we there see that Yahweh invites the nations of the world to draw near and to hear his mighty work of the refining. Isaiah 34:1-3. Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people, that the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world and all things that come forth of it. For the indignation of Yahweh is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them, he hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood. Why does Yahweh invite the nations of all the earth to draw near and to hear that they might consider his indignation against the wicked in his church and know what to expect when his judgment spread out among all nations, that they might know what to expect when his refining work begins among them, that they might therefore beforehand count the cost, his judgment. He declares is already pronounced upon the armies of the world, for the time is come that judgment must begin at the house of Yahweh, and if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the plan of the salvation that they had set up themselves? This is what it's talking about. It's talking about those at Gilead Center that was given the commission and given the knowledge of the working mechanics of the sanctuary today and how it works and given a tool, the creation calendar, a correct time period for the restoration of the sanctuary and put it into operation, and then failed to be sanctified by the very commission that was given to them to sanctify their congregation. And did you know what? Gilead Center couldn't bring forth the 144,000 if they wanted to, because they first have to become sanctified themselves. And then they have to teach the 144,000 that new song, which is the sanctuary system restored through the with the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua. When Gilead centered the house of Edom, the house of Esau, they couldn't sanctify the temple if they wanted to. And that's exactly, but they were given the privilege and the opportunity to try. Because of the fact that they were the firstborn, and they had the right to do that. But because they didn't do it, totally impossible for them to bring forth 144,000. And so that's where the judgment began, and they're the ones that, because the Seventh-day Adventists at large, they don't know what the gospel is to obey. Because they rejected the sanctuary system restored that Rhoda Johnson presented to them, and so they didn't have a clue of what constituted the true obedience unto the gospel. The house of David is the one that carried on and vowed to restore the sanctuary back to its rightful order and to become sanctified by it, and when that happened, then they are the ones that are privileged to teach this new song to the 144,000. This thing is bigger than all of us. Isaiah 34:4. And all the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down, as a leaf falleth off from the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. While verse 3 points out that the solemn events of this chapter take place in the day of the gigantic worldwide armament program, verse 4 being parallel with the Revelation 6:14, it reveals that they take place in the period of the sixth seal, in the days of the sealing of the 144,000. Well, this is wrong, folks. The sixth seal is a seal that closes out the judgment of the dead in the 11th hour, 11th parabolic hour. The sealing of the 144,000 takes place in the 12th parabolic hour under the sealing of the seventh seal. Not the sixth seal. So, Paviti Halef wrote this way back there, and he tried to follow up on it in 1950 by writing a tract specifically for the 144,000. And he says, he called it the General Conference Special in 1950, when he went to the General Conference with it. He said, it's time to bring forth the 144,000. Now keep in mind that V.T. Holliff is in the sixth seal, and he knows it. He knows where he's at. He's in the sixth seal period. But he doesn't know that he's in the tenth parabolic hour. He doesn't know that. He thinks he's in the 11th parabolic hour, and he thinks the 11th is the last parabolic hour. So that's the reason why, if he just had just read on a little further, where it says in Revelation 8 about the opening of the seventh seal, and he talked about that. He talked about that being a judgment scene for the living, that opening of the seventh seal there in Revelation 8. But he thought that would be in the 11th hour. And that's all he would know. So I'm correcting this thing right now, and I think I have before, but anyway, it's being corrected now. It reveals that they take place in the period, and I'm going to reread this whole thing and read it the way I'm going to correct it and put it in the modern day vernacular of the 12th hour. While verse 3 points out that the solemn events of this chapter takes place in a day of a gigantic worldwide armament program, and brother, that's what we're in right now. Verse 4, and that's in the, and we're in the 12th parabolic hour, and we're in the seventh seal. So that's when this gigantic worldwide armament program has opened up. Verse 4, being parallel with the Revelation 6:14, it reveals that they take place in a period of the seventh seal and the 12th parabolic hour, in the days of the sealing of the 144,000, judgment of the living period, in the harvest period, and the gathering of the innumerable multitude out of all nations. Well, there is a harvest right there of the second fruits right there in the 12th parabolic hour. The seal that we are now living in, for the seventh seal may overlap the sixth seal. See, he's saying right here, the sixth seal may overlap the seventh. No. The seals don't overlap each other. Now, this is another misnomer that he kicked on. He talks about these seals overlapping each other. How could they overlap each other? They were all confined to a time frame and prophecy. He didn't talk about the fifth seal that overlapping the sixth. He didn't talk about, but he talks about the sixth seal overlapping the seventh. Well, I know I have talked about before. This is the seventh, the sixth seal overlapping the seventh. Now, let's be real. The sixth seal came. For the judgment of the dead closed when the seventh seal opened in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, to start the judgment of the living, and to start the start with the ancient men for the house, had to. So the atonement 2002 was the transition from the closing of the sixth seal to the opening of the seventh seal. All right, it says now, Isaiah 34:5-11, for my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Adamir and upon the people of my curse unto judgment. The sword of Yahweh is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, and with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For the Yahweh hath a sacrifice and bozeman and a great slaughter in the land of Idumea. And the unicorns shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be soaked with the blood, and their dust made fat with the fatness. For it is the day of the Yahshua's vengeance, and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. And the streams thereof shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. It shall not be quenched in night nor day, for the smoke thereof shall go up forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever, but the cormorant and the bittern shall possess it. The owl also and the raven shall dwell in it, and he shall stretch out upon it the line of confusion and the stones of emptiness. For the immediate curse we see rests upon Idumea. Anatypically speaking, it is the land of the antitypical Esauites. So, Vernus Johnson represents the modern day, he represents the modern day Esauites at Gilead Center. The Esauites were in charge of the sanctuary of David. They were in charge of the Temple of David at Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas. Esauites, those who by rights should have kept the office which the antitypical Jacobites take away from them. And I represent the antitypical Jacobites, me and my wife. I represent the antitypical Jacobites. They so underestimate his value that they, like the Esau of old, sell their rights for a dish of red pottage, as it were. And what was that test of the red pottage to Gilead Center? That was the celebration of the birthday. Because Gilead Center proved that for 33 years that I was with them. In the 32nd year that I was with Gilead Center, I boycotted the celebration of the birthdays on the Day of Atonement in 2001. That's when Chaz and I got our eyes open and understood that that was pagan idolatry, that was defiling the sanctuary, and we got a book on it, and we delivered it to the church, and we had them to read it, and they rejected it. We told them that we could no longer celebrate with them in the temple, the birthday. That was their mess of pottage, idolatry that they had never given up ever in their life. They have never given up. They were, but I was raised up in the Adventist Church, and they were idol worshippers, and I was born into idol worship. I didn't have a clue what idol constituted modern day idol worship. And so therefore, when Yahweh showed Catherine and I what constituted idol worship, we immediately took a hold of it and repented of our idolatry. And we went and took the information to the church, to the Rhoda Johnson, and we were moving on. And so it says, for the further study on this subject, see the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 52 to 111. All right, so that would be interesting to follow up on that when we get through with this study here. To follow up on the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, and read about that. Isaiah 34:12. They shall call the nobles thereof unto the kingdom, but none shall be there, and all her princes shall be nothing. So, who is this day? Catherine and myself. We call the nobles to the kingdom at Gilead Center, 2003. We call the, 2002. We call the nobles to the kingdom, the leaders of Gilead Center. They were the Esauites, Brother Johnson, and his son, and his son's son. Daniel and Rodney and Brother Johnson, those three, they were the ones that was anointed, ordained ministers at Gilead Center. I was not an anointed, ordained minister. It was never offered to me. I wouldn't have, I hope I would have accepted if it had been offered to me. And I might have been. I probably would have. In ignorance would have accepted it. Evidently, after destruction falls upon Idumea, Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, 2002, none of her so-called nobles shall be found there to participate in the Exodus. So, when Catherine and I and Alan DeLong made our exodus out of Kermit, there was none of the leaders of Gilead Center with us. They were, as a matter of fact, that's the reason we left there, because they kicked us out of their midst. Isaiah 11:11. Unto the antitypical kingdom, the church purified. That's the only way we could be delivered, if we had to come through the atonement of 2002 that constituted the church being purified. For those that came through the atonement to continue on as leadership of the kingdom, then that constituted. And her princes shall be as nothing. Then it must be that those who escape and enter into the kingdom are mostly from among the common people. those from the streets and the lands, Luke 14:16-21. In the last solemn work, few great men will be in Yea. They are self-sufficient, independent of Yahweh, and He cannot use them. Testimony for the Church, Volume 5, page 80. Only those who have witnessed the temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted to act a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message, when it shall have swelled into a loud cry. Review and Herald, November 18, 1908. Isaiah 34:13-15. And thorns shall come up in her palaces, nettles and brambles, and the fortresses thereof. And it shall be an habitation of dragons, and a court for owls. The wild beasts of the desert shall also meet with the wild beasts of the island. And the satyr shall cry to his fellows. The screech owl also shall rest there and find for herself a place of rest. There shall the great owl make her nest, and lay and hatch and gather under her shadow. There shall the vultures also be gathered, every one with her mate. For the Yahweh does not forsake the earth. He does not forgo His power, nor His interest in the truth and righteousness. He does not let the world go into oblivion. What He does do, though, is make examples of some in order to save many others. That's what happened to Gilead Center. It was just a precious few down there left, but He made an example of them. For when the judgments of Yahweh are upon the earth, the inhabitants will learn righteousness, Isaiah 26:9. Now, I see where V.T. Holliff didn't quote that just exactly the way the Bible says it is, I think. Let's go read it from Isaiah 26:9 from the Scriptures. Isaiah 26:9. With my soul have I desired thee in the night. Yea, with my spirit within me will I seek thee early. For when thy judgments are in the earth, not on the earth, but in the earth, the inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. Now, when you say on the earth, you would think of being the whole world. And in a sense, it is. But when you say in the earth, you're getting more specifically to the headwaters of this judgment. And that is in the United States. Earth and prophecy is the United States. Believe it or not. And so, that's the reason I make such a point on just a little preposition. One little preposition. And when I read something, and if I'm familiar with that scripture, I know whether it's word for word right or not. So it's very important to know this. It's just as easy to put the correct right one as it is to put an alternate one, a substitute one. Okay, and which ends up being the wrong one. Is it armament, then, that the nations of today need for peace and security? Is atomic war to be their fear? What they need to fear is the sword of the Yahweh. For His sword shall be bathed in heaven, it shall come down upon Idumea and upon the people of His curse. They need not fear anything if they fear the Yahweh. Let them make Him their fear, their dread, and protection, Isaiah 8:13. So He commands, Isaiah 34:16. Seek ye out of the book of the Yahweh and read. No one of these shall fail. None shall want her mate. For my mouth it hath commanded, and His spirit it hath gathered them. Yahweh here counsels us to search the Bible and to implicitly believe that not one of His prophecies shall fail. No, not one shall fail to follow another in its turn. And why should we have this confidence? Because Yahweh Himself has commanded, and because His Spirit, not the wisdom or efforts of men, has given into a single volume, the writings of the prophets of old, the Book of Yahweh, the non-sectarian Bible as we know it today. Isaiah 34:17, and he shall cast the lot for them, and his hand shall for his hand hath divided it unto them by the line, they shall possess it forever. From generation to generation shall they dwell therein. Regardless, whether we take this verse to say that the wild beast shall possess it forever, or whether we take it to say that those who seek out of the Book of Yahweh shall possess it forever, our greatest concern must be to personally acquaint ourselves with the Yeshua and His truth, if we would gain His favor and find a shelter in the time of the trouble. Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment, and a man shall be as an hiding place from the wind, and a covert from the tempest, as rivers of water, and a dry place, as a shadow of a great rock and a weary land. Isaiah 32:1-2. Now we shall go on into the 35th chapter of Isaiah, which is but a continuation of the 34th. Okay, so now we're in Isaiah 35:1, and we're at the close of our study. This brings us to the end of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call, and let's close this service now with a song. Until then. My heart can sing when I pause to remember a heartache here is but a stepping stone along a trail that's winding always upward. This troubled world is not my final home, but until then my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I will carry on, until the day my eyes behold the setting. Until the day Yah calls me on, the things of earth will dim and lose their value if we recall their bottles for a while, and things of earth that cause the heart to tremble, I'll remember that will only bring a smile. Until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, it's joy I will carry on. Until the day must behold the city, until the day Yah calls me home, this weary world with all its toil and struggle may take its toll of misery and strife. The soul of man is like a waiting falcon, and its release is destined for the sky. But until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I'll carry on, until the day mas disponga-se a ti. Until the